Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR, that's 660 on your radio dial, each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent in gold prospecting and mining techniques. And also, as you all know, we will have special guests to discuss different frontier and mining-related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment. Or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes, or perhaps you want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. We do first today? Are you listening? Are you listening? The number is 452-1751. That's 452-1751. If you can phone me up and tell me who belongs to that telephone number, where they are, what they do, and how they contribute to this community, you will win a 1 troy ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining. That's your precious metals people, located at 208 Wendell Street. Once again, the phone number that you were looking for is 452-1751. As soon as you figured out who that is and where they are and what they do, you give me a call here at 479-TALK. That's 479-8255, and you can win a silver ingot. Once again, donated to Alaska Gold Trails by Oxford Assaying and Refining. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. That's 452-1751. That's Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank.
Would you like to tell us, now that you know who they are, what do they do?
It's a bank.
It's a bank.
You deposit your money there, and they keep it for you, and they have checking accounts, and it's a mutual bank.
Uh-huh.
That's one thing. That means it doesn't have any stockholders. It would be managed by a board, and it would be managed for the benefit of the depositors, and it's been here a long time. I'd say it's been here since mid-60s. I remember it back to 65, anyhow.
And 1965 is when it started here in Fairbanks.
Well, I didn't know that, but I remember it back then.
Do you know anything about their over 55 prime time account? Can you comment on that a little bit?
Yes, I do. I started one of those. Not for me.
What are you trying to say?
What are you saying?
You're not 55?
No, I'm not, but I started one with my husband. I heard about it from you, and I have an account there of my own now.
Uh-huh.
Before I heard about this account.
Uh-huh.
And it's for people over 55, and it pays 5.25% interest. And it's compounded daily, so that, you know, you get a higher interest rate because of that. It doesn't have any service charges. There's no minimum balance. They give you a couple hundred free checks, and they give you traveler's checks. They give you money orders. They let you use free notary services.
Uh-huh.
And, you know what else I know about this place? It's open 10 to 2 on Saturday.
You bet.
That's what I like about it, because on Saturday, you know, if you run out of money or you need some extra, or if you're just too busy during the week, you know, many people can't get to the bank during the week. It's just too difficult, too busy, and so they can go on Saturday.
Right. Well, that's very good. Once again, where are they located?
I didn't tell you that yet.
No.
They're located on 3rd and 4th.
And where's their parking lot?
The parking is on 4th.
On 4th?
Yes, on 4th, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so
530, 4th, 531, 3rd.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why that number changes.
And what's your name?
My name is Rochelle, and did I win?
Yes, you know what you've done. You've won. Do you know what you have to do if you win?
I go to Oxford Aspang to get my silver ingot.
Well, what do you have to do first?
Oh, first I have to come up to KFAR and I'll
and
get a certificate.
And where's KFAR located?
KFAR is in the mall there, Washington Plaza.
At Washington Plaza, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
And then I'll take it to Oxford Aspang and Ray Lester or Dee Church will give me this beautiful silver ingot.
Have you ever won a silver ingot before?
I certainly have. That's what I'm calling now.
Oh, is that right? What do you think of them?
I like them, but you know, when I was in there the other day, I saw something just as nice.
You did?
Yeah, they have one. Oh, the one that I've won just now is a 1 troy ounce.
Uh-huh.
And it has the map of Alaska on it. And on the back of it, it has the Big Dipper with the North Star.
Uh-huh.
But what I saw in it the other day was a bigger one. It's 10 ounces. And what surprised me is I figured it would cost about at least $100. But it was only $63.15 or something like that. Beautiful.
Did you buy one?
No, I'm kind of slow when it comes to spending money.
You'd rather win them.
That would be nice. But
look,
this is nice. I'm very satisfied with what I have here. I've sent one of these to my brother, and I'm going to send this next one to my sister.
Well, you know, Oxford Aspang Refining has been donating these silver ingots to Alaska Gold Trails over the years that we've had the show, and I think a lot of people out there would like to know that their phone number over there is 456-3967.
And we have 452-7858 for quotes on the prices.
And on the prices of what?
A gold and silver and platinum, and you call there and it's a recording, and they tell you what it is each day.
Ah, that's very nice news, isn't it?
Yes,
What's that number again?
452-7858. They're located at 208 Wendell, but the important thing is when you go there, for new people, they've got to realize it's upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're open 9 to 5, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 4 on Fridays. They're closed tomorrow because tomorrow's Veterans Day.
I see. Well, you certainly know a lot about Oxford Aspang and Refining. Are you a stockholder?
No, I just call for these prices every day.
I see. That's
and
real
I,
good.
I go there and I look at their jewelry. I was in there the other day because I had to do something else. But do you know what Mr. Lester did for me? I had a gold nugget, which I was just wanted some advice about. And first of all, I lost it. I got in there and I went to get it off my neck. It was gone. So Mr. Lester and the other man in the office walked all through the building with me with a flashlight looking for my gold nugget. We found it out in the snow.
My goodness, that's nice.
Yes, and then we came back up to the office, and he took a long time with me explaining all about my gold nugget and how it was made and what had been done to it and what it was worth.
How it was made? I mean, it's a gold nugget.
Well, I was interested in it. It didn't look natural to me, this gold nugget. Just it didn't look like real gold, like gold should look.
Mm-hmm.
And what he explained to me that it had been dipped in something to make it extra shiny. It doesn't give for my personal taste, I don't like that look. I'd rather have the idiosyncrasies or the...
Characteristics?
Yes, of
natural gold.
Yeah, natural gold.
Rochelle, tell us, what do you think about some of these silver ingots and other kinds of gold and silver items that Oxford Aspang and Refining has over there for Christmas gifts? You think it's a good idea?
Oh, I think it's excellent because you could also, besides the silver ingot, you could get one of the coins they have there.
Mm-hmm. And they're inexpensive, too, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
Under
$10.
Yeah.
But they have the coin. It has, I think it has caribou on it, and maybe a bear, and has Alaska, the great land.
Mm-hmm.
Big silver coin. But the other thing is, besides being attractive, besides sending a piece of Alaska out of here, it's easy to pack.
I see. Rochelle, thanks a lot for playing on our contest on Alaska Gold Trail. And
get my certificate ready, okay?
It's all set for you, Kate.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Bye now. Hi, you still there? No, real good. Well, my guest this afternoon, folks, is Bob Jacobs. Bob, I want to welcome you to Alaska Gold Trails. Bob, give us a little background on where you're from, when you were born, and how you happened to come to Alaska.
I was raised in a small town in eastern Pennsylvania, a little town called Westchester. There was a state teacher's college there and had a population of about 14,000 people. I left there when I was a senior in high school and moved down to Wilmington, Delaware, because my father had gotten another job down there. And I finished high school down there, and that was in 1937.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in aviation even when I was in high school. And so I'd gone to work for the Blanca Aircraft Corporation, which was 9 miles down the road at a little town called Newcastle on the Delaware River. And I went down there and worked for about a year. And then in 1939, in January, I went up to Newark, New Jersey, and went to school at one of the biggest mechanic schools in the world at that time. Later it became an Air Force mechanic school during World War II, and they trained thousands of Air Force mechanics there for working on all the planes that they had during World War II. And I got an A&P license there in 39. Then I got a job in South Carolina. Another fellow and I went down there and we were instructing. We started a mechanic school down there for the government. And we instructed down there for a couple of years until World War II came along. Actually, the Japanese hit Pearl Harbor in on December 7th, 1941. And it was just a few days later that I went back up north and went to work in one of the big aircraft factories up there. And
Where exactly was that, Bob?
Well, at that particular time, I went back to the same factory that I had been working in 1938. The Blanca Aircraft Corporation had a big contract from Fairchild, and they were building bomber trainers for the military. And they had converted their aircraft production to these military airplanes. In fact, they built another plant there to take care of the volume of airplanes that they had to produce. I worked there through 1940, to the beginning of 1944. And at that time, why the Air Force was beginning to gear up for a big push into Japan. They were beginning to build the B-29s all over. The B-29s were put together in Detroit and in Fort Worth, Texas, and aircraft factories all over the United States quit producing other kinds of airplanes and went to making parts for the B-29s.
Mm.
And I was in flight test at the time that I left the Blanca Corporation, and so there wasn't going to be any more airplanes to fly. We had two more airplanes to test hop, and the weather was down, and I was sitting in the operations office there one day. I had a copy of the old Alaska Life magazine that I'd picked up on a newsstand someplace, and I picked out two of the airlines that were advertised in there and wrote them a letter. One was Alaska Coastal and Juneau, and the other was Weens. Well, I got a letter back from Alaska Coastal right away, and they said, come up here, we need an A&E mechanic, and we'll pay your way up here. So I gathered up my tools and threw some things in a suitcase and took off on the train out to Seattle. And went down and got a steamship ticket on Alaska Coastal. In those days, they didn't have regular flights up the coast like they had a few years later. And most of the people that traveled back and forth traveled on the steamships. And so I got a ticket on the old Alaska Steamship Company, the Baranof.
Did it stop at all the towns along the way, Bob?
This particular ship was hauling general cargo and hauling passengers, and it stopped at all the villages on the way up the coast to Juneau. Stopped at Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, and Juneau. And after it left Juneau, it went to Sitka, and where it went from there, I don't really know. But it took us 6 days to get up to Juneau from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And in some places along the coast there, we were unloading freight and so forth for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually it took us 6 days to make the trip.
Was that, was there any incidents along the way that might be interesting, or is it just, was it straight?
Well, there was one thing that happened. The Coast Guard had put a deck gun on the back of this ship that I guess they figured they'd use against submarines or anything else that might attack them. And coming up across Queen Charlotte Sound, why they fired one shot through the thing, and it pretty near pulled itself out of the deck. And the deck plates weren't strong enough to hold it, I guess. And that was the last shot that got fired out of that gun.
Bob, you went to work then in the aircraft industry in Juneau, is that right?
I was working as a mechanic for Alaska Coastal at that time, and
how long did you work there?
I only worked there for about a month.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of a short job, wasn't it?
Well, Alaska Airlines had the head of maintenance was down in Seattle trying to find some A&E mechanics to work there in Juneau, in Anchorage. And he couldn't find anybody down there. At that time in the war, you couldn't find aircraft mechanics anywhere that weren't actually tied up in the in building airplanes and so forth. And so I went up there and talked to him. He was at the coffee shop in the Baranoff Hotel. And he offered me twice as much money as I was making for Coastal. So I quit Coastal and gave them 2 weeks' notice and went on up to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines 2 weeks later.
Did you? How long did you serve as an aircraft mechanic in Anchorage?
They had me troubleshooting their planes out of Anchorage. Maybe an airplane would be down at Kodiak with a fuel pump out, or an airplane would be down in Bethel or Homer or wherever they went. And I'd go down there and get the airplane going again and go back to Anchorage, and by that time there'd be some other place to go.
Mm-hmm.
So along in December, the mail plane had gone down between Unalakleet and Stebbins up on the Bering Sea, and it had gone up on its nose and bent the propeller and bent its strut, and the belly got torn out going across some ice hummocks. The airplane was on skis, so it could have been worse if it had been on wheels. Well, anyhow, they sent me up there with three mechanics, and we patched the thing up and got it back over. We had to change the engine out there.
Mm-hmm.
And 44 was one of those years when it was real cold, and we were out there on the ice. He had to change the engine and put another propeller on there and patch up the belly enough to get it over to Unalakleet. And we worked out there in the cold, and we were working with fire pots. In those days, they hadn't gotten Herman Nelson heaters yet. Herman Nelson mm-hmm. heaters were being used by the military, and the airlines didn't get a hold of them until after the war. And so we were using these old plumber's fire pots for heat, and we finally got the thing patched up good enough to get it over to Unalakleet. We spent some time over at Unalakleet fixing it up good enough so we could get it up to Nome, and later the airplane was ferried up to Nome, and we put it in the hangar up there and rebuilt it. And this was supposed to be a 3-week job 14 years later when I left Nome.
Bob, I want to explore that 14 years that you spent up on the Seward Peninsula, and right after a couple of announcements there. Folks, first of all, I'd like to let all the listening audience know that we're here with Bob Jacobs. If you have a question of Bob or like to make a comment, the phone number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. And some other things that I'd like to have you know about is one of the people that sponsors Alaska Gold Trails and has been with the program ever since the beginning, and that's B&L Pawn Shop at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Now, a lot of people say that B&L is the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. And folks, In my view, that's an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room. One-stop shopping will get you everything. Just to give you an idea, let me list a couple of the items that they have over there. Jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and the list goes on and on and on. In fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails, she'll even sweeten it more. If your money's a little tight, they'll be happy to help you out. Bring in anything you feel is of value or use, and the folks at B&L will loan you the money to get through to better days. Or if you sell items on consignment, they'll work with you on that too. So if you're looking for anything from snowshoes to diamond rings, see the folks at B&L Pawn. They're located once again at 605 Gaffney. Jim, Bruce, and Killer will be happy to deal. How many times have I told you the Killer never says no? And they'll sell anything but the chandelier, and only then because it's attached. But I don't know, if you go over there and you talk to Killer, she might just change her mind and sell you the chandelier. That's B&L Pawn. They're at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Phone number, write this down, 452-6491. You never know when that phone number might be worth a 1 troy ounce silver ingot. They're open 9 to 7 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal. Yeah, tell her that Jim's been talking about them. Another person or group that I want to talk about a little bit, one of the fine sponsors, in fact, is this sponsor has been with me since the day that I started Alaska Gold Trails in 1987, and that's Gage Truck and Auto. And you all know that whether it's an auto, a light truck, a motorhome, or even a big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gage Truck and Auto Repair. They're located off of Van Horn at 2058 Donald Road. Their phone number is 456-6156. And I want to ask you a question right now. Listen. How many people out there have needed a tow truck these past couple of weeks? How many of you been in a very awkward position on the highways and needed assistance, fast, reliable assistance? You might want to know that Gabe's Truck and Auto has a towing service that can't be equaled in Fairbanks. He has 3 wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Now, get this, folks. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. Now, you might want to write that number down and put it in your glove box just in case you have one of those emergencies. A little other information that I'd like to give you on Gabe's Truck and Auto. They have a new transmission specialist on hand. They have an entire new transmission department, so they can give expert assistance in automatic transmission repair. In addition to that, they have a new lube facility that's guaranteed to give you the fastest lube in town about the same time that it requires to drink a cup of coffee while you wait. Now, that's Gabe's Truck and Auto. They're located at 2058 Donald Road. Their phone number, once again, write this down, put it in your glove compartment, 456-6156. You can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field. Or once again, give them a call at 456-6156. And of course, tell them you heard Jim Madonna talking about them right here on radio.
Rules were made to be broken, and Burger King is doing just that 7 days a week. Stop by Burger King today and ask for the 99-cent special when you purchase a regular fry and medium soft drink. Burger King features a different sandwich special every day. Burger King is breaking the rules and offering a 99-cent sandwich with a purchase of a regular fry and medium soft drink. So go ahead, break the rules with Burger King. Today's 99-cent special is the double cheeseburger. Break the rules with Burger King.
Hello, this is Dorothy from Purdue's Jewelry. From now through November 18th, we're having a spectacular gold nugget jewelry sale. For instance, you have your choice of pendants or earrings, mini set with precious stones at 30% discount. Also, gents, ladies' rings, watches, watch bands from 20 to 30% discount. We accept all major credit cards, layaways, have instant financing. You know nothing feels like real gold. Stop in today. We're open 7 days a week in the Shoppers Forum Mall.
Well, once again, folks, we're here with Bob Jacobs. If you'd care to give us a call, the number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. If you have a question of Bob or care to make a comment on Alaska Gold Trails, 479-8255. We'd welcome your calls. Bob, we were on our way up to Nome and perhaps a new lifestyle. Tell us a little bit about what you did at Nome. You were what, a mechanic for Alaska Airlines up there? Did you fly for them? And what other activities were you involved with?
When we got up there with a traveler, I had still had these three mechanics with me. And about the time we arrived up there, the chief mechanic was a fellow by the name of Tony Johansson. He quit Alaska Airlines, and he and some other fellows had bought a surplus a DC-3 from the military, and they went into business flying from Seattle to Fairbanks. So right away, I kind of fell into his job at Nome, and I spent the next couple of years working on airplanes there. There was planes there that were flying the mail runs all over western Alaska. They went as far as north as Kotzebue, a Deering Candle Kotzebue mail run, and they had mail runs all over the Seward Peninsula. They had mail runs down the coast. There was 9 stops between Nome and Unalakleet, and then they went on down to Bethel. And at that time, Alaska Airlines had all the mail runs on the Yukon. Weens kind of overlapped some of our mail runs, like Nome to Kotzebue and some of the mail runs on the Yukon. But Alaska Airlines was pretty well established all over. And then, of course, they had the schedules that were going from Anchorage to McGrath and Unalakleet and on up to Nome. And in those first years up at Nome, Alaska Airlines was still a bush outfit. They hadn't gotten their first DC-3s yet. They got their first DC-3s in the fall of 1946. And from that point on, they went from the DC-3s to the equipment that they fly today. And so it was a pretty busy place to work at that time. I worked as a mechanic for 2 years up there, and then I went to flying full-time. I'd learned to fly back in Delaware in 1938, and I'd gotten a commercial along the way, and so the turnover of pilots was pretty big in those days. Most all of the flying was VFR in those days, and pilots used to fly in some pretty tough weather up there in that country. There weren't any trees out there in that part of Alaska, so you'd get these whiteout conditions, and you'd get high winds out there and blizzards and so forth. And you get coastal fog along the coastlines up there that made flying pretty difficult. So as time went on, things naturally improved, but there was a big turnover of pilots up there for one reason or another. And so when an opportunity arose, I went to flying. And I was flying bush up there for a number of years up until 1959, when I finally quit Alaska Airlines and came over to Fairbanks.
What, Bob, you were flying the mail planes in?
Yeah, we were flying the mail planes into all of those villages over in western Alaska and on down to Bethel and along the Yukon. We'd go from Unalakleet over to Caltag and Nalato twice a month. And in those days, there wasn't landing fields as we know them today in hardly any of the villages. A good bit of the operation was conducted on floats in the summertime because you could land on the rivers all over in Alaska. And operations out of Kotzebue was the same way. There was very few airstrips up there that you could land on in the summertime, and they'd fly their mail runs and so forth with floats out of there. I flew out of Kotzebue for over a year during that period. And we'd go as far north as Point Barrow with the mail. At that time, all the mail that went out to western Alaska and up to the villages out of Kotzebue and on up to Barrow, all that mail came through Nome and had to be redistributed, and it was flown up to Kotzebue, and then the post office up there redistributed it to the villages up that way. And we used to, a lot of times we had so much mail for Barrow that we'd go on up usually to a point and lay and land on the beach up there in the summertime, or if we had floats, we'd land on floats up there in the lagoon, and a plane would come down from Barrow and pick up the mail and take it to from Point Lay up to Wainwright and Barrow.
Mm-hmm. And how many years, you say you were up there, 14 years?
Yeah, I left there in the spring of 1959.
Mm-hmm.
And came over here to Fairbanks.
What did, tell us, did you have any experiences that might be considered a little bit out of the ordinary? Wait a minute here, Bob, we got a call for you. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, question for Bob. Back in those days, for the first time I flew to Alaska, it was 1949, McKinley Airways. Do you recall that?
Did you get the question, Bob?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I was just wondering, McKinley Airways was the name of the outfit, and I just wondered whatever happened to it. Was it absorbed or what?
I don't know really what happened to it. Back at that period after the war, there was all kinds of surplus airplanes available in the States and in Alaska. And there was a lot of small outfits that started up on the strength of picking up cheap airplanes. And some survived and became airlines that we have up here today. But the majority of them fell by the wayside somewhere along the line.
Exactly. I was just curious if you knew just what was the outcome of that one. But thank you very much. And enjoy the program.
Thank you. Bob, we were talking about some, maybe some experiences that were a little bit out of the ordinary. Maybe, do you have any airplane problems during your flying time up on the Seward Peninsula?
Well, in those days, airplanes weren't as reliable as they are today. For example, most of the airplanes that we were flying in those days had radial engines in them, and a lot of the airplanes that were operating up here at that time didn't have any kind of cowlings on them. And these big radial engines had these cylinders sticking out in the cold air. And a lot of times when it was cold, like it is here now, you'd have a temperature inversion. And maybe you'd take off from a place in Alaska where the temperatures were warm enough to operate this particular airplane okay, but you'd be going into an area where maybe the temperature was 40 or 50 below zero or colder, and the top of this cold air would usually be somewhere between 1,000 feet and 3,000 feet, and the airplanes, the majority of them carried a thermometer out in one of the wing struts there, and you could look out there and you could see the temperature change real quick when you drop down into that cold air. And a lot of times those old engines would freeze up as soon as they got down in the cold air, and the engine would quit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd better be in a position where you could land someplace without too much trouble. Of course, we'd put the airplanes on skis long about this time of the year, or maybe a little later, depending on how much snow we had. And they'd be on skis until there wasn't enough snow left in the spring to fly anymore, and then eventually they'd go on wheels or floats.
And you had perhaps some interesting experiences up there at Nome with one of these aircrafts. They also had a problem with the oil in some of these engines.
All of these engines, the older type of engines, didn't have a pressurized oil system in that the valves and so forth were had oil pressure, and you'd have to pull the engines had to be checked every 20 hours, and one of the things that you did, you'd pull all the push rods out of the engine, dip the ends of the push rods in a barrel of Marifax grease and put them back. And rocker boxes had Zirk fittings on the rocker arms, and you'd give them a couple of squirts with a grease gun and put the rocker box covers back on. And so for the first 10 hours, why, you'd be flying along and you'd see little bits of grease come back off the engine and land on the windshield, and you'd sit there and watch for another piece to come back and hit the windshield. And so after about 10 hours, why, the grease up in the top rocker boxes would run down the push rods inside the push rod housings, and the tops of the push rods would start to run dry. And when you'd pull the prop through before you started the engine up to make sure you got the oil cleared out of the cylinders, you could hear those push rods squeak up in the top. And if you happened to pull one out, they would have be kind of a red color, but all the grease would go down to the bottom. So those engines weren't as reliable as engines that they had later. And those engines, if you were lucky, you'd get 300 hours out of them, and then you had to pull the cylinders off and top overhaul the engines, and with a little luck, you could get another 300 hours out of them, and that was it before they were major overhauled.
When you lost all the oil, what did it look like?
Well, some of those engines had weaknesses. For example, the eight-cylinder Lycoming engines, the smallest one was 215 horsepower, and the biggest one was 300 horsepower. They would burn out pistons occasionally, and when that happened, why, you'd get a hole in the top of the piston, or it'd burn out down the side of the pistons past the rings. And when that happened, every time the piston came up, why, you'd get on the compression stroke where that pressure would go down into the case. Now, there was a breather on the case that would handle the normal pressure that was built up on the in the case, but in this case, the pressure was more than the engine could handle, so it would blow out someplace at the next weakest spot, and that weak place was always around the thrust bearing up in the front of the engine, and it would blow the seal out of there, and it would start pumping the oil out right through the thrust bearing. Now, if you had a single engine airplane with the engine right up in front of you, why, all of a sudden, the windshield would be covered with oil, and oil would come back on the hot exhaust pipe, and it'd start to smoke. And
did you ever have that happen to
you?
Oh,
yeah. I had that happen quite a few times. And one thing we used to do was carry some rags around in the left-hand door pocket there, and if something like that happened, why, you could reach out the window and scrape a hole in the oil out there enough so that you could see to get down. But when it happened, why, the engine was still running, but it didn't have any power. And it wasn't very long before the engine would run out of oil, and the engine would seize up, and the prop would stop right out in front of you. So when that happened, why, you'd better find a place to get down pretty quick. And
you had that experience near Nome, didn't you?
Yeah, I had that experience quite a few times, and I was just lucky enough to be someplace where I could get down okay.
And we're going to come back and talk a little bit, Bob, about besides the mail, the passengers that you flew, the equipment you flew, and some of the mining concentrate that you flew around the Seward Peninsula there, right after this announcement. I want to talk a little bit about the folks over at 1916 South Cushman, and we all know them as Tip Top Chevrolet Buick. And folks, I want you to know that Robbie Ginther started with this program back in 1987. He's been with me ever since on Alaska Gold Trails, and he's been in Fairbanks, well, this is for 32 years, and it's the third generations of Ginthers to run Tip Top Chevrolet Buick. And Robbie Ginther is right now the general manager. And just to give you a little bit more information, this is a hometown type car dealer. The people that work for Tip Top Chevrolet have been there for many, many years. For example, Jim Brown, who is the sales manager, has been there with Tip Top Chevrolet for a number of years. And of course, his philosophy is that He wants to match the proper vehicle up with the needs of the customer. Elmer Ostboom, who is in charge of the used cars, has been with Tip Top Chevrolet for 6 years, and of course he has a similar philosophy to that of Jim Brown. Now, in the service department, Randy Meadows. And Randy, once again, has been with Tip Top Chevrolet for 6 years, and he's been the service manager for 2.5 years. So you can see that these people have a great deal of experience, been with the company a long time, and they are well established here in the community. And one last point is Randy Mayhew. Randy's been with Tip Top Chevrolet, guess what? 6 years. So they know their business over there. They've been around for a long time, and they're there to serve you. That's Tip Top Chevrolet. They're located at 1916 South Cushman, and you better write this phone number down. It's 452-8211, and you go over there, and you tell them you heard Jim Madonna talking about them right here on Alaska Gold Trails. And don't forget, buckle up with Tip Top Chevrolet. One other sponsor that's been with me a long time, and that's Macaulay's Reprographics. What do they do over there at Macaulay's? They reprograph. In addition to that, if you need information, you talk to Rebecca, that's Becky Macaulay, or Alfred, and they'll give you the information that you need to know about such things as blueprinting, copying service, and visual aids. Also, Canadian maps are available over there at Macaulay's Reprographics. They also sell and service surveying equipment and supplies. So stop over there at Macaulay's Reprographics. If you need anything in the way of drafting equipment, they've got a huge supply right there. And in addition to that, you prospectors and miners who need measuring devices, they've got hip chains over there available for you, along with the appropriate compasses to perform the layout of your mining claims. That's Macaulay's Reprographics. They're located at 721 Gaffney. Their phone number, 452-8141. And you tell them you heard about them right here on Alaska Gold Trails from Jim Madonna.
Alaskom presents another Alaska myth. Shattered. The good old dog sled. Alaskan transportation. But myth has it that it's the only way we can get around up here.
What's the trouble, officer? I'm not even out on the street yet.
Look at the sign, buddy.
Huh?
You're in a no barking zone.
There's no end to the preposterous myths about life here in Alaska. Like the one about Alaskom's high cost. The truth is, with our high quality and total service, you can have it all every time you call. Inexpensively. With Alaskom, the one you call on.
Golden North Motel's room rates have gone down. Now rooms start at $31.95 and there's no bed tax. That's right, $31.95 and there's no addition of bed tax. And that's not all. Golden North Motel has free van service to take you anywhere you want to go in the Fairbanks area. Talk about saving you money. Reduced room rates, no bed tax, and free van service around town. You can't beat this deal. So if you live outside the Fairbanks area and are planning a trip to town, or maybe you just want a home away from home, go to the Golden North Motel, 4888 Old Airport Road, or call 479-6201.
Once again, folks, we're here with Bob Jacobs, and we've got a call. Hi, you're on the air.
I was just going to ask Bob if he could remember Charlie Traeger.
I sure do. Charlie Traeger had an inn over there at Yonkleet when I first knew him. And when I went up to Nome, was there that first time in 1944, where, of course, we stayed at Charlie Traeger's place there in Yonkleet when we were working on that old travel here. And I think it was about 2 years later, I was down at Yonkleet on the mail run. And in those days, why at this time of the year when the days were short, why we'd spend the night in Yonkleet. And so we used to stay there at Charlie's place. And this particular time, why, it was Charlie's 80th birthday. And there was another Alaska Airlines a pilot in there from Anchorage who was up flying a fur buyer around to the different villages. And Charlie had a cook down there by the name of Ivanov. And he was up there cooking a big dinner for Charlie's 80th birthday. I don't think Charlie lived very long after that.
Well, he died in 50.
In 50, yeah.
Was that Stefan Ivanov that was cooking?
Yeah, right.
That's Emily Ivanov Brown's
right,
father.
Yeah, right.
In fact, I met you in 49 at Charlie's in Unalakleet, so I've known you better since then, but that was the first time I met you was at Traeger's in 49 in
Unalakleet. Yeah, right.
And those were the good old days, and I guess we'll never get done talking about them. I don't guess they'll come back, but we sure had a lot of good times in those days.
Thank you for the call, my friend.
Take care, Bob.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bob, tell us a little bit. You were flying people and supplies into a couple of tin mines up there. You want to give us a little information about those tin mines quickly? We've got a few minutes left here.
There was one tin mine
just up the coast a little bit from Teller. Teller is 60 miles west of Nome on the Bering Sea coast there. And this place was called Lost River. There was a hard rock mine up there about 5 miles up the canyon from the beach. And, of course, the mine went back up into the hill there. And they brought the ore out of the mine up there on with the little railroad cars. And they had a facility built down the side of the hill there that had all the shakers and the ball mills and all of that to grind up the ore.
Mm-hmm.
And the ore would start up at the top of the hill and go down through all these pieces of machinery and wind up down at the bottom of the hill as a black ore. It looked like coal that had been all ground up, and the little pieces of tin were about the size of rice, and they'd put them in 50-gallon drums. A 50-gallon drum of that tin ore weighed about 1,800 pounds, so it was a little hard to handle. So they started just filling half a drum, and they'd put the cap back in and haul it off down to the beach. And later the next summer, why one of the Alaska steamship boats that was going back to Seattle empty would come in and pick the tin up off the beach and take it down to Seattle.
Well, Bob, there was also a placer mine up there that used employed a gold dredge for tin mining. Where was that at?
Up back of Tin City. Tin City is up in the Bering Straits there. There's a military radar site there. And in the early days, why there was mining in the creek there that comes right down next to the airstrip where the radar site is today. And about 15 miles northeast of there, there was a tin mine called Buck Creek, and that was a placer outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the early days, that had been mined with a dredge. The old dredge was still sitting there next to the airstrip, but it hadn't been run. When I was first in there, it was back in the late 40s sometime, and the dredge probably hadn't been run for 30 years. In fact, when the dredge was run, all the operation was done with horses.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't any cats or anything at that time.
I understand that they later turned that into a dragline type operation, and that the families would camp out in tents up there. Is that right?
The operation was a placer outfit, all right, and they were using a dragline to pull the ore in, and they had grizzly there and various kinds of machinery to shake the ore down.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually the tailings and stuff would go out on a conveyor belt and be dumped out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the ore would wind up going to a sluice box because there was a lot of gold mixed in with the tin. And they would take enough gold out up there to pay most of their expenses, and what they got from their tin was extra.
Mm-hmm.
The people, most of the people, the laborers and so forth that they had working there,
they picked that tin off the conveyor belt, didn't they, some of the big nuggets?
Well, most of those people were from over at Wales Village.
Mm-hmm.
And the women and kids were living in tents over there in the summer. And They'd sit up on the conveyor belt and pick the tin nuggets off the belt. The mining company would pay them extra for that.
Guess what, Bob? We run to the end of the show. I want to thank you for joining us here on Alaska Gold Trails. Folks, I want to thank you for participating in the show. And we'll see you next week right here at KFAR 660 on your radio dial.
From ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick. A startling announcement from the East German government today. Its border with West Germany has been opened. East Germans who want to go directly to West Germany can do just that. In Wiesbaden, West Germany, ABC's Gary Bautel tells us that pictures on West German television indicate the Berlin Wall has been breached.
Some people were already crossing from East Berlin into West Berlin late tonight. Apparently, some of the border points are open for East Berliners to go over with just a stamp in their passport. They expect that most of them will be open by 8 in the morning, and we would imagine that there will be a great many people who will be visiting in West Berlin, if not to stay permanently, after 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
This is John Bascom. It was nearly 2.5 years ago that then-President Ronald Reagan stood before the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin and asked the leader of the Soviet Union to end the division in Germany.
Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate.
And now it has happened. The stunning announcement that the gate between East and West Berlin is open drew praise from President Bush.
Our objective is Europe whole and free. And is it a step towards that? I would say yes.
Asked if the movement toward freedom could sweep the entire Eastern Bloc, Mr. Bush said, I don't think anyone can resist it. John Bascom, ABC News, Washington.
More news after this.
It's Sears' gigantic $20 million furniture inventory clearance. We cleared our warehouses to make room for the 1990 lines arriving soon. Now at Sears, choose from many one-of-a-kind, discontinued, and overstocked items at prices 10 to 40% lower than Sears' usual great low prices. Bedroom furniture, dining room sets, sofas, chairs, sleepers, and much more. Look for the red and white clearance tags in Sears furniture departments everywhere. And hurry in for the best selection. Sears.
That's your money's worth and a whole lot more.
You can count on Sears for great hardware and great low prices. But sometimes our tremendous buying power brings you very special values. Sears great items, like our half-horsepower Craftsman garage door opener with two transmitters, a conventional transmitter and a keychain transmitter that fits into your pocket or purse. Right now you get all that for only $139 or $199 with normal installation. Quantities are limited, so hurry to Sears, where you get your money's worth and a whole lot more.
A Pentagon spokesman says a couple of Soviet ships are believed to have aimed laser beams at several U.S. military planes flying over the South Pacific. He says there have been 4 such incidents during the past few weeks. He also says one crewman's eyesight may have been damaged.
An Air Force crew member aboard an HC-130 experienced what may have been laser illumination about 1,200 miles southwest of Hawaii. That incident may have resulted in visual injury.
The Pentagon's Pete Williams, the laser beamings occurred despite an agreement last summer by top U.S. and Soviet military officials. Although that agreement is not due to go into effect till the first of the year, Pentagon officials call the incidents dispiriting. The Nicaraguan Contras and Sandinistas now meeting at the U.N. in New York, trying to reach an agreement on a ceasefire. The Sandinistas promised to reimpose a ceasefire if the Contras disband. Do you pump your own gas? Citizen Action, a national consumer group, has released a report called Cancer at the Pump. It says people who use self-service pumps face much greater cancer risk than the general population. At a Washington news conference, group spokesman Ed Rothschild said folks who pump their own gas should be aware of the dangers of inhaling benzene vapors.
They need to have warning labels that people know that when they're refueling and there are no vapor recovery systems, that they are being exposed to a carcinogenic substance. Warning labels that say that this product contains benzene, a known carcinogen.
He says customers should be warned that saving a few pennies by using self-service stations could be harmful to their health. In Cincinnati, a couple was down to their last $20 before payday. They wondered whether they should spend $5 on lottery tickets. They did. Turned out to be a wise decision. They won $20 million in Ohio's Super Lotto game. And so